1-800-Flowers.com is more than your birthday, anniversary, or just because gift-giving destination. We put our hearts into everything we do to help you celebrate all life's special occasions with friends and family. From our farmers and bakers, florists and makers, everything from 1-800-Flowers is made with love every step of the way, because we know that nothing is more important than delivering a smile. To learn more, visit 1-800-Flowers.com/ACAST. That's 1-800-Flowers.com/ACAST.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi there, this is Martina Navratilova.
Hi, I'm Mats Wilander.
Hi, I'm Andy Murray, and you're listening to The Tennis Podcast.
Hello and welcome to The Tennis Podcast, brought to you in association with The Telegraph and with Eurosport. I am Catherine Whittaker. I am joined remotely this week from David Law, who is in sunny Solihull, aren't you, David?
Yes, briefly. Then I'm going to be on the train in about 20 minutes' time. So let's crack on with The Tennis Podcast.
Yeah, you've been a very busy man. As avid listeners to The Tennis Podcast will know, we were both at Queen's last Tuesday. There's a Tennis Podcast Extra. We're becoming a bit of a fan of those, of an interview I did with Andy Murray, during which he was very nice and very interesting. So check that out if you haven't already. And then, David, what did you do? Then you hot-footed it to Madrid, didn't you?
Yes, I went over to the Tiebreak Tens event over there. And I did sit about three chairs along from the players' pen. These events, they have all the players sitting out there throughout all the matches, so that, you know, you've got eight players, eight women, eight men, two tournaments running alongside each other, knockout format, tie breaks for every match. Just to let you know, it was won by Grigor Dimitrov on the men's side and Simona Halep. Incidentally, match of the tournament was Dimitrov against Dan Evans in the first round, 14-12, Dimitrov having saved a match point. Anyway, results aside, much more interesting in many ways was the fact that I was sitting two or three seats along from where all the players sit together, and right next to me were Grigor Dimitrov and Maria Sharapova having a little chat.
Tabloid, David. I can't believe this is the David Law that I've known for 10 years.
Well, I mean, you know, what am I going to do? Just pretend it's not happening? You know, these are two people who were publicly together and then publicly not together. And they were having a cosy little chat.
Cosy little chat. They knew all the cameras were on them.
Well,
I think it was all fine. Are you suggesting that if you were Nicole Scherzinger, you might not be too happy with how cosy the chat was?
You see, now you're leading.
Just try and put yourself in the mind of Nicole Scherzinger just for a moment, David.
I can't do that for my own amusement. I can't do her
moves. I mean, anybody that watched Tiebreak Tens on Dave will have known exactly where you were sitting, David, because you were on the telly for most of the evening.
That was well planned out by me.
I sent David a text saying, "I see you. You look really tired." And David didn't take it particularly well.
Well, it's not the greatest compliment I've ever been given, to be quite honest.
No, it's not. And to be fair, I always do get really annoyed when people tell me I look tired, because basically, you're being told you look rough, aren't you? I was only saying it because I knew what time.
That's not what you said at the time.
No, it's not what I said at the time. I only said it because I knew how knackered you were. And
you
tell everyone how many hours sleep you had on Thursday night.
2 hours and 33 minutes.
It's a nap. That is actually a nap. Anyway, you're refreshed now in time for the Tennis Podcast, I assume.
I was fine the next day. I could have happily done a Tennis Podcast right there and then. Sleep is for the week. I don't need sleep.
I would still be recovering days later. Anyway, sleep is not for the week. I don't have the time to even get into that, but I cannot tell you how much I hate that saying. Anyway, that's the movements of David Law over the past week. I hope you've enjoyed that rundown. I've been very much London-based. I am doing some commentary this week for the WTA and for the ATP on Madrid. I'm double-dipping. So I'm very much across what's going on there, and we will talk plenty about it. But first and foremost, I think we have to talk about the big news in tennis this week, David, which is the announcement by Novak Djokovic on his website that he has culled his entire team, physio, fitness trainer and longtime coach and quote father figure, not Djokovic's quote, but that's how he's referred to sort of widely in the tennis circle, or was referred to. He has culled the lot of them, and well, he's not quite flying solo because he still seems to have love and peace coach Pepe Imaz with him. He didn't mention Pepe Imaz in his statement on his website, but he has been seen with Pepe Imaz in Madrid. He is in tow. And yeah, the statement on his website is pretty extensive and interesting. And he himself uses the term shock therapy.
Well, actually, I don't know whether it wasn't a quote, was it? I think it was written by whoever's written the sort of release. But I mean, it's very much.
But it's in the voice of Novak Djokovic.
It's an official.
It's written in first person.
Right.
So yeah, it's written in first person.
The whole thing. I thought there were sort of quotes from all sorts of people within it.
The shock therapy thing is supposedly from Djokovic himself.
Okay, well, I mean, it is. It regard, you know, even if it wasn't, I mean, if it is, then that's even more meaningful in terms of what he's getting across. But I mean, even if not, the fact is that it is an official release, and that is an incredibly evocative phrase, isn't it? I mean, for a start, it has other meanings, which I'm sure you'll get onto. But I mean, That gives an idea of just how much he's looking to do something about where he is. I mean, you know, it's a year ago. I was reading back on some of the things that we were writing and saying a year ago, and we were almost bored with Novak Djokovic's domination. I mean, he was so good that it wasn't even competitive, some of the tournaments that he was playing. And after the French Open, we were talking about how many this guy is going to end up with. And people were talking about 20 slams. Now, he might still get 20 slams, but it does show how quickly and prematurely we as an audience and a media, we jump off into the stratosphere. And
Goran Ivanišević, who said that, sorry, Goran, who definitely doesn't listen, but Goran was the most bandwagon-y, jumpy of the lot of us, wasn't he? I remember at the Australian Open last year, him telling you that he couldn't foresee him not winning any slams in the sort of near to mid future. Do you remember that?
Yeah, but I think that just goes to show, doesn't it? You know, what is happening at a given time feels like it will go on forever. And of course, things change. Life happens.
Life happens. Is that you reworking my trademarked phrase of things happen, David?
If you like.
If so, I'm annoyed.
All right, we're falling out already. Well, first of all, what's going on? What do you think is going on? I mean, for me, I think he's been pretty candid really there. I think he needs a jolt, and he knows that this is not happening for him, and he's been trying. I mean, he's been putting in the work, I think. He's looked up for it, but just bereft as to why what was happening a year ago isn't happening now. And I think he's really confused by it all. I think it's probably made him pretty ratty about it all. And inevitably, you look around you and try to work out, well, what could I change to change things around for me fortunes-wise? And it's possible that Novak Djokovic may just have run out of that little bit of edge that he's had over the last 5 years or so, and he may never get it back. He may never be able to find those reserves of energy and intensity that he needed in order to stay at the very top. He may have lost that sort of locker room power, as Dave Sammel, the tennis coach, calls it, where other players are looking at him and thinking, I don't know how I can beat you. I don't know how anybody could beat you. But if recent years and some of the comebacks that we've seen, Federer obviously the most recent example, but there are others, people like Stan Wawrinka, who brought on Magnus Norman, became a different player altogether, Andy Murray, who got over the line after employing and then re-employing Ivan Lendl. Maybe Djokovic thinks, you know, I need one of those. I need something that is just going to get me going again.
Yeah, well, I think he's said as much. I think he's pretty much said precisely that in his statement. I mean, the shock therapy reference I find fascinating because that has pretty much exclusively negative connotations. I mean, most people's mind, I think, goes to One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest or something really similar. You know, shock therapy is something that is happening when something's gone really wrong. I mean, it's last resort, isn't it? It's last chance saloon. And this is a guy that's ranked number two in the world. I know that in the race, he's nowhere near number two. And on recent results, you know, I can see why he wants desperately to change something. But it certainly is indicative of the turbulence, I think, that Djokovic is obviously experiencing in his own mind. And look, to go further with the analysis, there have to be a lot of assumptions and suppositions and you know, speculation, which I'm quite happy to do. But I would stress that it's based purely on all those three things. It is just speculation because all we know is what he said in the statement. And frankly, you're right, he has been very candid. He's been very good to us and given us quite the insight into his mental state. I look, each to their own. I have my major question marks over this Pepe Imaz bloke. He's not the sort of guy I would want around. And look, if his results were great, you'd be saying, if Djokovic's results were great, you'd be saying, okay, well, each to their own. And if it works, you can't knock it. But it's not working, so maybe I can knock it. And yeah, the fact that he has remained while everyone else has been cold, I find slightly alarming. I do wonder how he fitted in to that team. He was sort of parachuted in as a very major presence all of a sudden into a team that I presume was sort of very tight-knit and very well-gelled and everyone had their roles, and suddenly this guy's around and is of importance. And I'm not privy to the details of how everyone got along and gelled and worked together, but it wouldn't surprise me if there were some issues surrounding that. That would not surprise me. And I do find it interesting that he's still there and everyone else is gone.
Yeah, I mean, it wouldn't surprise me either, but like you, I have no inside info at all. I think mainly, I just think there's a malaise there with Djokovic. His relationship with Marion Vida is probably one of the most unsung sportsperson coach relationships that we've had in tennis, I would say, in many ways, because they've had a decade of success together and more. And Marion Vida doesn't get talked about that much. And yet, I think he's a big part of what Djokovic has become. But I don't know whether you can go through a whole career with one person. And even though they had Becker there for 3 years, which probably lengthened it for both Vida and Djokovic in terms of it gave Marion Vida some time away from the circuit as well and kept his energy levels up. But at some point, I think everybody needs another voice and just somebody else, even if it's the same message, to tell them what they should be doing. For me,
I don't disagree with you, David, but sacking your physio and fitness trainer is not that. I mean, since when has sacking your physio ever solved any of those problems?
Yeah, but I think
that's indicative of something bigger than just needing a new voice.
But I get that. But they're all voices. They don't just tell you how to run about or how to fix your bad back. These are your team. These are the people around you that reinforce messages. And if he wants completely different messages in order to jumpstart him, then I can kind of understand it, to be honest.
He still wants the love and peace message.
Well, I mean, I don't get that, really. But I also don't know what role this guy has. I mean, who knows what he does or whether he's just
his younger brother, Marco, is that his name? Marco, I think his younger brother's name is, who's there with him in Madrid. He describes Pepe Imaz as his coach, as in his tennis coach. And Pepe Imaz describes his approach to tennis coaching as a love and peace approach.
Hmm. Okay, well, who knows? I mean, look, maybe that'll be one of the cornerstones of what becomes the next phase of Novak Djokovic's career, and maybe it'll be hugely successful. We have to wait and see.
What do you make of the fact that he's done this without the next, without the replacement in position?
Yeah,
in post,
that's an interesting one.
Without having even decided. That suggests to me more knee-jerk and panic than, had he done this and at the same time announced the new person and said, it's just time for a new chapter, this new person's going to come in, I really feel like they can give me what I want. But he's done this. He's basically saying, I'd rather be on my own in the interim than be with you guys.
Yeah.
For now.
I mean, I don't know how short-term or what the time period was that went into it, but I know what you mean. I would have expected probably somebody in his mind to already be there waiting to take over the reins, and that would be the inspiration for doing it. But every player is different, and every player at their various stages of their career, I think, need to assess. Sometimes they don't get it right. I mean, there are some coaching relationships that I think we've thought might work and haven't. You know, they don't always have the chemistry.
Connors and Sharapova, you say?
Oh, yeah.
One match.
That was a corker, yeah. I forgot.
Was
that
it one match or was it one practice session?
It was one match, I think, yeah. Just one match he was in the crowd for, Jimmy Connors. I don't know. I don't thoroughly understand Novak Djokovic. I think it's such a departure to go from where he was a year ago and to take such drastic actions, to literally have none of the team around him that he had a year ago when it was all going so well. But this is a guy who, when Andy Murray was going through these stages and re-employing and then re-employing Lendl and this sort of thing, we used expressions such as leaving no stone left unturned. And if Djokovic is doing that, then fair enough, really. And it may not work. We may have seen the best of him. It's not. I think he will win again. Maybe not as big as he has in the past. But I still think he's fit and strong enough, elbow permitting and things like that. As long as structurally his body doesn't fail, he still looks fresh to me. Generally, he's still an incredibly lithe athlete. He doesn't look weathered at all. So I see no reason why he can't have success again if he can make the right choices from here. And I just
I think so too. I think he'll win again. I don't think he will dominate tennis again, but I think he will win again. On the subject of I've interrupted you because I know exactly where you're going, David. On the subject of who he should employ as his new coach, he has as good as said it's going to be a super coach. I mean, this is what he said. He said, I'll not stay by myself without a tennis coach for too long. I assume it's going to be someone that has been through similar experiences like I have. Not too many people in the past of tennis have managed to get to that stage and play at that level, so I'll see. What he's saying there is, you know, I want someone that's been at the top, that's won Grand Slams, that's had trouble, he's pointing out rightly that the pool of those people is not a big one.
There
aren't all that many candidates.
No, I know what you mean. I just before we get onto that and the obvious, inevitable and relevant
it's not inevitable, David, because I'm in charge.
No, well, it is because I've got the microphone just at the moment. Anyway, the fact of the matter is, for me, that one of the big differences between Djokovic and, say, Federer, which I think will probably truncate Djokovic's career more than it has Federer, is I don't think he, and in fact I don't think anybody, has the innate love for the game that Federer has. And I think that not winning is bothering Djokovic more than it bothered Federer. I think Djokovic is a bit more like Pete Sampras, who, incidentally, I bet is one of the people that he's approached. I would not be at all surprised if Novak Djokovic has approached Pete Sampras. And like Sampras, they have a love of winning, first of all. I mean, I think Djokovic probably enjoys the game more than Sampras did, but they both love winning. And when the winning stops, their motivation dips dramatically, I think.
I think that's a great point,
actually. I think they find it harder to reason with the with the sort of schedule that they have to put themselves through, the travelling, the training, the dedication, the sacrifice of doing normal everyday things and enjoying their money in that way in order to keep going. Sampras, Sampras is his hero.
I don't think there's any way Sampras is taking that gig, though. I mean, I'm falling into the same trap here of making very bold, decisive statements about what's going to happen coaching-wise, and I'm going to be made to look like an idiot. But I'm not saying it wouldn't be a good appointment, and it's not the right thing for Djokovic to try and employ Sampras. I cannot believe Sampras will have any interest in being on the road.
No, but these days, Catherine, look, how much is Ivan Lendl on the road? How often are we seeing the guy? I don't think we've seen him since when? Did we see him in Miami? Maybe in Miami.
But he lives there.
We're barely seeing Ivan Lendl on the circuit since they got together. He's coming in for the Slams, the O2. I mean, if Djokovic assembled a team that Pete Sampras was happy to be part of, for instance, and pull some strings
but
and Sampras give some
tips. But Sampras
doesn't
even do any broadcasting work, does he? I mean, he is not a presence.
Neither does Lendl.
In tennis at all. Lendl has had like jobs with the USTA and that sort of thing. He's always been sort of coaching-ish at some level, hasn't he?
I actually think that the thing that...
Sampras wants to play golf, you know, hang out and be a dad.
Yeah, he does. But you can't tell me that there aren't competitive fires within Pete Sampras that have been watching what's been going on the last 5 or 6 years with Becker and Edberg and Verlander and all these other coaches.
I don't know. I've been to Champions Tour events with Pete Sampras. And, okay, this probably isn't the most... It could have changed since the real upsurge in super coaching, but his interest in current tennis was minimal. He wasn't following it. He was completely content, you know, similar to Tim Henman, really, just completely content with his lot and what he achieved and happy to just put that behind him and enjoy playing golf.
I should say, I don't think Pete Sampras would be up for it either. And I think one of the reasons ultimately...
Oh, so you're just arguing with me for the sake of arguing.
No, I'm not. I think there are reasons why he might do it or he could do it. And I may be wrong. My hunch is also that he would want to be coaching somebody a little more similar to himself in terms of game style. Pete loved serve and volley. Pete loved talking about serve and volley. I don't think he can necessarily get on board mentally quite as much with the Djokovic type of game as he could if he was coaching Federer or somebody. But that having been said, I would have said the same about Boris Becker. And that came to pass. I think more likely people that would be interested in coaching Novak Djokovic, I think Mats Wilander would probably be interested. And he's another one who's been world number one and tried to figure out ways of staying there. We've got some other suggestions at Tennis Podcast on social media. Lots of people have been getting involved. We will be having
Mats a little poll. Mats is an interesting one because I think deep down, I feel completely oppositely to Sampras. I think deep down he does hanker after coaching again. I don't think he's in any rush to. I think he loves his broadcasting and loves his Verlander on wheels and all that stuff. But I think if the right opportunity came up, he would jump at it. I don't know if Djokovic is the right opportunity. I think personality-wise, there might not be a gel there.
Hugh Beasley says Guga Kuerten. How about Gustavo Kuerten? Those two have got along in the past and they've both drawn hearts on the clay of Roland Garros. Maybe.
Yeah, maybe.
They're both like to have a bit of a laugh. Nicole Eclectic, who's a big Djokovic fan, says Martina Navratilova.
I think that's a great shout.
I think
that's,
she'd be very interesting.
Sprung to my mind.
I particularly like Rather Play Tennis, who says Tony Nadal, which I would really enjoy.
Well, no, okay. That I mean, not Tony Nadal, but I tell you what, this isn't going to happen because this is something that's never happened in tennis, and I don't think Djokovic is going to be the first person to do it. But I bet you he would love to have Ivan Lendl.
Well,
if Ivan Lendl were available.
Yeah, I'm sure he would, but...
It'd be Lendl.
I'd like to.
I think Lendl's the right person.
I wouldn't mind a Lamborghini, but not going to happen.
But it's very interesting, isn't it? I mean, the Rubicon was crossed in football, what, however long ago it was. It was only a recent thing that sort of poaching managers from other clubs became a thing that happened and was accepted and sort of a little bit not okay, but basically all's fair in love and war.
JFM says...
In tennis, it's never happened.
Marit Safin, Catherine.
You're just not even acknowledging my points. You're just talking over
me. No, I'm acknowledging it. I'm just coming up with another suggestion from another listener. JFM says Marit Safin, Catherine.
No way. No.
He's the first person I ever saw play against Novak Djokovic.
It's not going to be any... What sensible input is Marit Safin going to have? He's busy being a politician in Russia anyway.
Why couldn't... I mean, come on. You're doing Marit Safin down. He was a Grand Slam champion. He was world number one. He was awesome.
Yeah, but he's... No, I'm... That is not fair at all. Nothing in what I said suggested he wasn't awesome.
So what
I
are you
don't
saying?
Think he'd be an awesome coach.
Why?
Well, what can you imagine Marit Safin saying to Novak Djokovic? Let's go to a party.
He did more than just go to parties, Catherine.
I think now he doesn't do that much more than go to parties.
He must have had something to have won all that stuff. Meetings. I mean, come on, he knew what he was doing on the tennis court, didn't he?
The odd practice, but I don't think that's the right kind of input. For Novak Djokovic.
Okay, Grant Campbell finally says Michael
Maybe it
Stich.
Is. Maybe he needs to have a load of fun.
What about Michael Stich? There's a good fit.
Michael Stich, you're going to put me in a position now of sort of inadvertently slagging Michael Stich off. Michael Stich doesn't know what it's like to be at the very top of the game.
Oh, you're both, come on.
Be the guy with the target on his back. He won a Grand Slam and he very much deserved to do so.
He
and he was a very solid, consistent top player.
He's number two in the world.
He doesn't know what Novak Djokovic is going through right at this minute.
Well, so the only candidates can be former world number ones.
I think possibly, yeah. Possibly.
What about an
established
think
that's,
coach?
I do think that's a big feature. I think that's the main feature of what Djokovic is going through right now. And yeah, I think, yes.
What about Boris Becker?
I mean, yeah, like Lendl, he's the obvious candidate.
He's staring him in the face. I mean, come on. It's just so obvious. Anyway, let's just see who what people
Beck
thought.
Beck is too busy working for Eurosport. It's not going to happen.
In pole vaults, Catherine, which we'll start early here, we have the following four categories.
You're allowed what? You can play the pole vault card once in this podcast, David. So if you're playing it now, that's fine.
I'm playing it. I've only got
but
one
there
pole
will be
vault
none
this
later.
Week. So here we go. What sort of coach does Novak Djokovic need? No coach. He needs time alone.
Oh, this pole vault was ridiculous.
Former number one super coach, established coach, or Pepe Imaz?
Pepe Imaz isn't a coach.
22% say Pepe Imaz. I think most of those are Murray, Federer and Nadal fans.
Or just peace and love fans.
Troublemakers, I say. 22% of 900 people. Crikey, there's more than 200 people who went for Pepe Imaz.
I still think it's porn bots.
So what about an established coach? I mean, you know, we're talking about people like Darren Cahill, Larry Stefanke, people who've been there and done it as coaches, but not necessarily as players themselves at the very top
level. None of them would be better than Marin Vida for Novak Djokovic.
How do you know?
Well, I don't know. I'm just saying my opinion. I don't know for sure. But
why was this ridiculous poll?
A sliding doors situation where we see every single scenario and get to assess which one would be better. We're going to see the one scenario and assess whether or not that works. We won't know the opportunity cost of his decision.
Okay, so if he gets an established coach and he carries on and does really well, let's just bookmark this bit of the podcast right here and remember it. Everybody, so there we are. And yeah, basically the winner was an established coach. 36% believe that that's what Novak Djokovic needs, but it is...
But he said that he wants somebody that's been where he's been.
And yet only 19% of people think that he needs a super coach. Amazing.
Well, they're disagreeing. They're saying they know better than Novak himself. So, I mean, that's silly, isn't it?
There we are. Catherine Whittaker, pole vault.
I'm just saying, I mean, he said it pretty unequivocally, hasn't he, I think?
Yeah.
I think it's pretty clear what his intentions are.
Yeah. Anyway, Catherine.
Who do you think, David? Who should he employ?
I don't know. I think he should.
Oh, come on.
I think he should go with a super coach, actually. I think he would be better off with... I do think he needs somebody like he had with Becker who just... makes him a kid again, you know, makes him look at the coach and just be a bit wide-eyed the way Federer was with Edberg, you know, somebody like that. That's why I mentioned Sampras, because I know that Djokovic absolutely idolised Pete Sampras when he was a young lad. And I could see him desperately wanting to tap into and frankly just hang out with Pete Sampras. Whether that would come to pass, we'll wait and see. Catherine, we've finally fixed our ad system, so we should not have ads popping up in the middle of sentences anymore. Let's take one right now.
Should we test it?
Yeah, do it.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Hey everyone, I'm Craig Robinson, co-host of the Ways to Win podcast, alongside my good friend John Calipari. I've been on the go recently. Phoenix, Kansas City, Chicago. If you're like me and have a home but aren't always at home, you have an Airbnb. Hosting your home or a spare room is a very practical side hustle. If you live in a big game town, you can Airbnb your place for fans to stay in. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Right then, we hope you enjoyed those appropriately positioned ads in our podcast for the first time. We're really sorry that they've not been appropriately positioned up until now.
I've actually been programming them to come out just when you're talking about something I don't like.
I've been programming them to come out during the pole vaults. So, yeah. But
hopefully it's gone wrong again.
We genuinely are sorry about that. And we're pretty confident, aren't we, that that problem is now resolved. We have conclusively not put the Djokovic situation to bed because everyone's just firmly sat on the fence. And so that, yeah, the resolution to that remains to be seen, but we will follow it intently. So we'll talk about some other issues in tennis. Let's get a pretty nasty one out of the way before we start talking about goings on in Madrid, David. And that is Gael Monfils. He, well, first and foremost, tennis wise, he did suffer a pretty awful loss to Hyun Chung in his first match in Munich last week. He's definitely having a tricky time at the moment, Monfils. He's been pretty honest about that, but regardless of any tricky time he's having tennis wise, he publicly posted a message that he'd received on Instagram. It was actually a reply to a post that he put up saying, you know, today wasn't my best day against Chung, but I'll work hard and I'll come back stronger, something along those lines. And unlike with Nastasi, I'm just not going to repeat anything that was in this because it was, insane, for one thing, truly insane, like some sort of neo-fascist, racist. I mean, it was all the bad, horrible things in one message. And, you know, Monfils just shining a light on what public figures, sports people have to endure. And, you know, much like the point I made with the Nastasi thing, the most horrifying thing about it is Monfils could probably, okay, maybe not all of them would be as vitriolic as that one, but could probably have picked from a handful of messages to make public to illustrate what they experience sort of day to day and shouldn't have to. It's not really a debate point, is it? It's similar to Nastasi. It's awful. It shouldn't happen. But unfortunately, the conclusion is most people, hopefully, are nice, kind people. Some people aren't. And unfortunately, though some people have a platform, a few platforms online on which they feel they can act and speak their mind with utter impunity. I mean, that's the bottom line, isn't it?
Yeah, it's really worrying, actually, that these platforms, I'm not saying allow it, because they do remove it when they're on it, when they get it reported. I still don't think anywhere near enough. But it bothers me that anybody can say anything on these platforms for a period of time until they are removed at anybody. And it just, it should be an arrestable offence immediately, as far as I'm concerned. But how do you police it to that degree? And I was thinking about this. If ever I was a family member of one of these players who's getting this sort of abuse or representing them, it would be very hard not to say, oh, you know, cancel that account, don't go on it. And yet at the same time, you think, well, why should these people be allowed to drive them off social media that they otherwise might enjoy interacting with real tennis fans and real human beings, rather than this scum that just starts firing off abuse in every direction just because they have absolutely no lives of their own? Well, I hope they go back and crawl under their own little rock and where they came from.
Yeah, we shouldn't talk about them anymore, because that's precisely what they want. But it's awful. And I'm sorry for Gael Monfils and everyone else that's experiencing that. He's certainly not alone, but good on him for shining some light. In terms of Madrid this week, there's things upcoming. We've had, what have we had? We've had 2 days of the women's event and 1 day of the men's event. We're recording this on Monday morning, on a day when there's quite a spicy match coming up later on between Maria Sharapova and Jeannie Bouchard, David. We've talked about the background to this. Bouchard, of course, has probably been the most singularly outspoken player in tennis about Maria Sharapova's return, her receipt of wild cards. I mean, Bouchard has said she doesn't think she should. You know, if she made the rules, Sharapova wouldn't be back at all. And she's called her a cheater. You suggested that Sharapova's probably threatening legal action behind the scenes, or might be. And of course, the Madrid draw has thrown up a second round meeting between the two of them. Aside from anything else, I should point out that Bouchard's victory in the first round was a pretty big deal, because she hasn't won a tour-level match since the Australian Open. I mean, she's been having an awful time. She dropped down to play an ITF-level event against the advice of her coach.
Yeah, I respect that,
I give her great credit for.
Yeah, it must have taken a bit of, you know, pride-swallowing, really, to do that, having been a Wimbledon finalist and you know, semi-finalist in the other slams. And you know, we've seen other players do it. We saw Agassi do it back in the day when he went down to 120-odd in the world, and Goran Ivanisevic did it at Challengers. But, yeah, she's been a very high-profile athlete for a long time, on and off the court. She's made sure of that. And to be fair, to have gone back and done that, I give her great credit for that.
Yeah, and she's expressly said that it was against the advice of her coach. And she's talked quite honestly about how she thought it would sort of ground her, and she did need a bit of a reality check. And yeah, I do think she deserves credit for that. But now her reward is a second round meeting with Maria Sharapova. It's going to be spicy.
It is. And regardless of where you stand on the should Maria Sharapova be getting wild cards debate, let's be honest, it's kind of interesting to see this sort of matchup, isn't it? Who doesn't want to know what's going to happen between these two, given the history between them? Let's be honest, we do, don't we? I do, anyway.
I do, yeah, I do. I mean, I do. I do want to watch this match. I will watch this match.
Who's going to win?
I think Sharapova's going to win.
Probably, yeah.
I mean, yeah, I think Sharapova's going to win. I watched her match yesterday. I commentated her match against Mirjana Lucic-Baroni, and she did that thing of improving throughout the match and growing into it. And you could see her confidence growing. And, you know, there are a couple of wobbles. I think there will be moments in the match where Bouchard will challenge and you'll feel like there's a match. But and Sharapova could wobble, but I think Sharapova will win. And she'll probably meet Angelique Kerber in the third round, and that'll be very interesting.
Excellent. I've got a bit in. I've just had a note pop up on my screen from a certain Mr. Simon Briggs of Telegraph tennis correspondent fame, who says to me, "I'm hearing that Agassi for the Novak job. What do you think?"
Is it? Where's he hearing it? Ask how reputable are his sources?
He says something to do with some cryptic quotes from Novak in Madrid yesterday, and he's heard one or two places elsewhere. So watch this space. I mean, imagine that.
A name we didn't even mention, because I just assumed that Agassi, again, there's no way he'd be up for the travel. He's got so much going on with his foundation and charities, and, you know, he lives in Las Vegas. Goodness, no. I mean, I always find that intriguing, someone living in Las Vegas. I mean, do you just, if you need, want to just pop to the shops, do you have to go to the strip? I just the thought of it.
They do online shopping these days, don't they?
Boggles my mind. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Maybe there's all his online shopping.
He just sits in his house on the strip doing online shopping. Yeah. Maybe he does need a coaching job.
Pretty cool. Four slams a year, eight weeks
of
travel.
We've just got hot off the press, yeah. Gossip.
And then Indian Wells, as Simon points out, Indian Wells on his doorstep, you know. Maybe just come across for the O2 as well. 10 weeks a year. Job done.
Maybe. I mean, I'd love that. Come on. How great would that be for tennis, for Andre Agassi to be a presence, a relevant current presence in the sport?
I could imagine them having some very deep conversations as well. With Pepe involved, yeah. Maybe too.
Oh, yeah, some meditation sessions. Yeah, count me out. Okay, elsewhere in Madrid, things that
don't think you were invited,
happened.
To be honest. But
no, I don't. I think I'd be a party pooper, don't you? I don't think I'd bring the right vibes to that setup.
Don't think so.
No, I'd be like Mark in that episode of Peep Show where he goes to Rainbow Rhythms. Have you seen that?
No.
No, well, that's what I'd be like. Garbiñe Muguruza, David, got booed off the court last night her home fans.
Oh, I didn't see that.
After losing, she double faulted to lose the match to Tamir Bachinski, who is a great player, and let's be honest, that's a horror of a first round draw. But David, Muguruza was awful, truly awful, and showed very little fight, really, and that was what the home fans were responding to. And goodness me, I mean, she's the defending Roland Garros champion, and that's it. I mean, she looks a shadow of a player that could win a Grand Slam. I mean, I know sort of anything can happen in women's tennis at the moment, but I don't see Muguruza, even within the confines of that, I don't see her defending her Roland Garros crown.
No, I would agree with you. I think she would have to undergo an overhaul in form of Stan Wawrinka proportions, wouldn't she? Because if you remember when Wawrinka won the French Open, he put in that awful performance in Monte Carlo, where it was a good 6 or 8 weeks earlier, wasn't it? Which actually I do feel as though, I think we've perhaps compared Muguruza to Wawrinka before in that way. I guess it's possible, but she hasn't been in form for a long time. And now I know I'm setting myself up for a fall here, because I predicted big things for her at the start of this year. She looked like she'd been working out really hard. She looked ultra motivated. And ever since she lost to Coco Vandeweghe at the Australian Open, I don't know, she's looked all at sea. And it's a shame. And I mean, I hate to see and hear home crowds booing their player. I always think, well, what good does that do? But then you think, well, these people have paid their money, that they've come to try to get behind a player, you would think, and if they have felt that they're not getting a proper effort. I didn't see the match. I feel a little
look, I don't know, I can't comment on proper effort, but it was a poor show.
Yeah, I mean, she's struggling. She gave them really nothing. Struggling, and I think that she having been there in Madrid for the tiebreak tens night and seen the way the crowd reacted to her there, and they were very positive, and the way they did to Feliciana Lopez and Fernanda Verdasco.
Again, though, she played horribly in tiebreak.
Yeah, well, she did.
Tens.
Yeah, she went. I think she went 5-1 up and then ended up losing 9 points in a row or something like that. And but the way they got behind Lopez and Verdasco and her as home players suggests that this is a crowd that really wants their own to do well. And to lose as heavily as that, yeah, it's just a little uncomfortable. I can't really imagine a British crowd getting on Andy Murray's case like that. But then he doesn't lose 6-3, 6-1 to people at home, does he? It's just that's a shame, a real shame. I hope it comes right for her because she's capable of so much, so good in the game.
Yeah, and it's more evidence. I mean, we talked last week about sort of how silly it seems that Sharapova's been installed as the French Open favourite. But when you've got the defending champion playing like that, you've got Angelique Kerber, who I commentated yesterday against Tamea Babos. And yes, it was a pretty straightforward victory. But still, this is not the Angelique Kerber of last year. There were still, you know, had Babos mounted more of a challenge, it could have been really different. I think she looks completely beatable to me, Angelique Kerber. Bottom line, you've got defending champion Muguruza, who's just, well, I mean, she's nowhere. You've got Serena Williams on the sidelines. I mean, maybe it doesn't seem so silly to make Sharapova the favourite. I don't know. Well, I mean, the bottom line is there isn't a favourite.
There's a lot
really.
Of people that could win it that we would not normally be installing as a favourite for a Grand Slam tournament. That much is sure. I would not have a huge amount of confidence putting backing behind anybody. I think the best player that I've seen in recent weeks on the surface is Simona Halep, from the way she played at Fed Cup. And the
she
way...
was great yesterday. She was very impressive. Okay, she had a slightly wounded opponent, Kristina Pliskova, who had flown in from Prague as she reached the final in Prague, lost to Mona Bartel. She'd flown in the night before and she seemed to be really struggling with a stomach strain. But still, Simona Halep, utterly professional. She really looked like she meant business. She's so fit and strong. And, you know, if it weren't for those mental frailties, which we've had such an insight into over the last few months, she would absolutely be the favourite. But, you know, there's still a question mark over her mentally. So, I mean, it's interesting, but it's, yeah, it's a bizarre landscape at the moment. I've mentioned a bit of any other business there, which is the events that took place last week. Bartel winning in Prague. Anastasia Pavlyuchenkova won the title in Rabat. She's already lost in Madrid, though. It is a tough ask to come fresh from a run to a final and have to play the next day, especially in somewhere like Madrid, where the conditions are so different. It's at altitude. It really is different. And to have to adjust with presumably limited practice to adjust to the conditions, it's a big ask. She beat Francesca Schiavone in that Rabat final. And she's given some great quotes to Courtney Noyen, who's the WTA insider. I've only seen what she's posted on Twitter, but really interesting about, you know, how continually people are referring to her age and how continually people are asking why, given that she's ranked, I think she's going to go back inside the top 100 now, but she's been outside the top 100 for a while, and people constantly questioning her motives for still being out there. You know, why do you still want to keep playing tennis if you're outside the top 100? And she just doesn't get it at all. They're just really refreshing, pleasing quotes. She says, come watch me. If you don't enjoy, go and watch a 20-year-old. I mean, she's just great. She's 36. She enjoys tennis. She's probably not going to win any more Grand Slam titles. But then no one thought she was going to win the French Open that she did win. So good for her.
Yeah, well said. I love watching her. That's all I'll say. I think she, if you haven't seen much of Francesca Schiavone play tennis, just go watch her, because the process is enjoyable.
Absolutely. On the men's side, Sasha Zverev silenced all of the questions that I asked about him last week. He'd had a couple of tough losses to Nadal in Monte Carlo and to fellow next-genner Hyun Chung in Barcelona, and I questioned whether, you know, this is the first sign of adversity that he was having to cope with, and he's just won the title in Munich, so that's me silenced. And Pablo Carreño Busta has won the Estoril title, and he's beaten Gilles Muller, that famous clay quarter.
Well, I tell you what,
in the final.
I tell you who he did. I mean, well done, Gilles Muller, for getting to that final. But you know, Carreño Busta, on his way there, he beat Tommy Robredo, Nicolas Almagro, and David Ferrer to get to the final. That's not a bad little list of clay court scalps. I know that they're certainly two of the three, probably all three of them are past their very best days, but still, very well done to him.
He is such a solid clay court player, Pablo Carreño Busta. He's not someone anyone's picking for the top five or for Grand Slams, but nobody will want to face him at Roland Garros. He very nearly beat Djokovic at Monte Carlo a couple of weeks ago. Had he had a bit more belief, I think he probably would have done. But yeah, he's really establishing himself as a very, very solid top 20 player. Final note of any other business, and we're not going to dwell on it because it's not deserved, but Ilina Stasi, who my autocorrect on my agenda has autocorrected to nauseates, which I think is fabulous.
Have you pre-programmed that?
I haven't. It's just the universe doing the right thing.
I see.
Like Pepe and Maz. Nauseates has been banned from Roland Garros by the ITF, so that's Roland Garros and Wimbledon, which he will not be making an appearance, and I think that's just fine. Speaking of Wimbledon, David, final note, you went to the big pre-Wimbledon press conference yesterday. I don't know how you fitted all this in. Oh, yes, I do. You don't sleep. But yes, you went to the Wimbledon press conference. Was there any interesting news?
Yeah, well, I think it was last Wednesday, actually, that one took place. And I mean, they gave the prize money out. The players are getting another huge increase. I think first round defeated players are now going to get £35,000 for just getting into the draw. So, you know, it certainly incentivizes players to keep going in the game and getting their rankings up. Around the Sharapova issue, I mean, they just did all they could not to say anything, really. The one notable thing was that they did reveal that qualifying at Wimbledon, which has always been basically just a turn up and watch kind of affair, is now going to be ticketed. It's going to be restricted in terms of numbers. They say that has nothing to do with the potential of Sharapova possibly being amongst the players.
Do you believe them?
Well, you know, it's an enormous coincidence, there's no question, but at the same time, I'm not going to go and call Wimbledon liars. They've said that it has nothing to do with it, and I need to take that at face value, because who am I to say that they're not telling the truth? But yeah, it certainly seems that if she were to play qualifying, there's no logistical reason that she should not be able to play. So we'll just have to wait and see how that unfolds.
Good fence sitting, David. Congratulations.
What do you think?
Yep. I think that's probably something that they would have to have had in the pipeline for a very long time. But mind you, the Maria Sharapova situation has been in the pipeline for a very long time. So I think it's possible.
It might have made them think, you know, 6 months ago, you know what, if she did play, actually, and in future, if we had big players, what would we do? Look, they've certainly...
But do you think it's about that, or do you think it's just about sort of supply and demand? Hang on. Yeah, it's really nice that Wimbledon qualies is something you can rock up for free, but we could be making some extra money.
Well, no, because they've already said that the money's going to charity. They're not going to take a penny off that money.
I think they don't
need that money. It is just a question of them needing to work out, really, whether it's sustainable. I think last year and the run of Marcus Willis and all those sort of things, I think it... As nice as an idea as it is that people can just show up and watch, it's probably become more difficult to manage it.
Yeah, I think that's probably true. I think it's a shame because that's one of those sort of hidden gems in tennis or in sport, even really, that Wimbledon tickets are so hard to come by, pretty much impossible to come by. But you know, you can rock up at qualies. Yes, I know it's not on site, but you can get a flavour of Wimbledon. You can see, you know, there's always people of interest, people, you know, someone like Francesca Schiavone might be playing Wimbledon qualies, for example. And you can just rock up and get a flavour for free.
Yeah, I got one more final bit of business.
It's a fiver, Catherine. And it's going to charity. So
one final
good.
Bit of business from me.
Hit me.
Congratulations on being part of the Five Live Wimbledon team. You'll be with us on BBC Radio in, what is it, July, only a couple of months away. First time for you.
Thank you, David. Thank you. I'm following in the David Law footsteps.
Oh,
well,
dear.
I'm literally half filling the David Law footsteps because you've got very big feet. But but yes, they're good footsteps to be in. I'm delighted. It's going to be great.
Yeah, it is. It's going to be great fun. Right, I better go and get the train.
Thanks for allowing me to toot my own horn there. Yeah. That's great. I didn't set you up for that.
No, well, yeah, there we are. That's it. Team,
choose
teamwork.
To believe me or not. We
you
have
gonna do,
been...
You going to repay it now and give me something to be brilliant about or no?
No. Yeah, I have to say your gossip tweeting about Sharapova and Dimitrov was brilliant, I think.
It's not really on the same scale, is it?
I think gossip columnists would be proud of you, David.
Thanks.
On that note, we have been the Tennis Podcast. We have been brought to you in association with The Telegraph and with exclusive hot off the press news from The Telegraph's tennis correspondent Simon Briggs. Thank you, Simon, for that. And we have been brought to you in association with Eurosport as well. And we'll be back next week.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. And if you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. It streamlines your processes to make your business more efficient, which makes you less busy. Mail checks, invoices, legal documents, and everything you need to keep your business running with Stamps.com. Seamlessly connect with every major marketplace and shopping cart. Schedule package pickups and see your cheapest and fastest shipping options from different carriers. With rates up to 89% off USPS and UPS rates. And with the Stamps.com mobile app, you can take care of mailing and shipping wherever you are. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Sign up with code PROGRAM for a 4-week trial, plus free postage and a free digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. That's Stamps.com. Code PROGRAM.